Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. And we now declare it G1 Climax season. I am John Pollock, and here he is, the Lord of Vancouver. Bruce is here with us, the man that will be one of our many members of the post-wrestling army over the next month that will be tackling the G1 Climax, the 35th edition of said tournament. Bruce, how are you today?
Doing great, John. Looking forward to the G1 getting started this weekend. Yeah, it takes a village to raise a kid. It takes a cafe to cover a tournament like the G1. As we get into it, we were talking before we started about the fact that they're starting off pretty hot with, you know, 2 10-match cards this coming weekend. Looking forward to talking about those with Karen and I. And really, as I think we'll get into talking about the tournament today, kind of seeing how some of the good and the bad in New Japan right now is reflected in the tournament this year.
Well, before we dive into the deep end of the G1, get all of our thoughts out, I know that you are a world traveler, Bruce, and the biggest question everyone has as we approach your latest G1 coverage this year, have there been any specific scotches that you have been procuring over the past year when it comes to your analysis and grading of the matches you are about to digest?
I don't know that any of the scotches that I brought back home with me, back to Vancouver from Scotland over the past few months, I don't know if any of them are, there are a lot of like kind of one-offs and everything like that, single cask releases and things like that. So I don't know that I can necessarily, bump any of those into, the usual star rating system, that I use. I think I'll be sticking with the core 5 that I've held up until this point. Although, like I think I said to you and Wei when I came back, there, that the fact that, you know, Port Ellen has been getting pretty damn snooty and snobby with, with how, folks can even deign to, you know, come onto their premises, let alone, take a look at or sample the malt in question, kind of, you know, got my back up a little bit. But as of right now, I can't think of anything else that is widely enough available that I could put in the 5-star slot other than Port Ellen.
Well, for our newer members of the Post Wrestling Cafe and such, if you have not experienced the full Post Wrestling G1 coverage, I would say our rating system is second to none. So you can look forward to that over the coming weeks. We'll get the housekeeping out of the way. Tonight at midnight is the deadline to join the Post Wrestling G1 contest where you can submit your picks. It's free to enter. It's a real fun contest where we keep up with the standings throughout the whole tournament. All of us will be entering our picks as well. So you can grade yourself against us as well. So you can put on Ghetto's hat for the next month and try and figure out where this whole G1 is going. So again, postwrestling.com/G1. And to follow along with all of the G1 podcasts, postwrestlingcafe.com. If you sign up today, it gets you 30 days access. You will get all of the G1 podcasts over the next month. And as well, we might be dropping the odd one on the free tier of the Post Wrestling Cafe. But if you want the full experience, $6 gets you in the door. Beginning with this Sunday show, Bruce and Karen will be reviewing 20 matches to kick off the G1 Saturday and Sunday in Hokkaido. So, Bruce, let's get into kind of just the overall vibe check of New Japan. This is always, the G1 is an excuse to look at sort of where is the health of this company going into the tournament. I don't think anyone is comparing this to the highs of some of the big G1s over the past decade, but in comparison to the last year or two, where is your sense of anticipation for this year's tournament?
Well, on the one hand, I think the actual matches themselves in a vacuum and the roster that has been assembled this time is going to give folks who do maybe just check in for Wrestle Kingdom Dominion and then a smattering of G1 and whatnot, you are going to get, I think, a more representative indication of kind of where everybody lies in New Japan right now, for better or for worse with that. You know, we spent this past weekend talking about a pretty quick turnaround in creative and general vibes as far as AEW is concerned. And on the flip side, I'd say that in a much shorter space of time, things have gotten a little bit rougher in New Japan. If you compare where we are at now in the middle of July to where we were at February with New Beginning, when I and Karen and a number of other people were pretty much as high on the promotion as we had been, maybe even since the pandemic started, really. You know, the Goto title win was as feel good of a title change as you could have. You had Tsuji and Gabe Kidd slugging it out for the honor of the promotion to be effectively the next man up. Naito was settling into a safe tag title spot. You had guys like Bolton and Maloney fleshing out the mid card. And then the Tanahashi retirement road was kind of ahead of us and, you know, bringing a lot of emotion. You fast forward 5 months and no younger guy got the rub from the Goto title run. Naito is out effectively permanently and houses are down as a result. Kids cooled off a bit. The title's back on a champion who wasn't really a big draw at the Dome. The second biggest show of the year in Dominion had a pretty middling reception. The ability of the Tanahashi matches to draw has stalled out. House of Torture has grown and seemingly has, you know, Hontai and War Dogs all tied with it. Another young tournament winner lost in a challenge of a champ who has nothing left to do in the junior division. And the lack of promotion of stars in the G1, of different stars in G1, hasn't necessarily drawn casual North American fans back in. So things have cooled off a fair bit in the past few months. That said, like I said off the top, on paper, this could be a real meat and potatoes G1, which sets the younger guys up who are making up, I would say, the real focus and what I think a lot of the attention is going to be paid on in this tournament well. You know, faith in Gato's booking is not great right now. You also have the fact that the last year's G1 ended with a challenge, you know, with the tournament winner issuing a challenge for King of Pro Wrestling rather than at Wrestle Kingdom, which kind of throws the very traditional, well, we have our G1 winner. Maybe they defend the briefcase once or twice. Maybe there's one or two other perfunctory title challenges, but we have a pretty clear picture as to where we're going with the Dome. I don't know that we will necessarily have that, even if you have an absolutely well-booked tournament here, which, again, I think all eyes are going to be on. A lot of the younger guys, all of whom have done, you know, they've done this, they've done that, they've had a couple of moments here and there, but none of them necessarily feel significantly higher than they were a year ago, which when you think about the fact that we talked about, oh, Tanahashi doing this whole retirement thing over the course of 2025, great, that's a year, that's a grace period that you now have to get those guys up and ready to go. I don't know that I can say that any of those guys necessarily feel hotter than they did at this time last year. So they've got a lot of work to do, and it's possible. It's absolutely possible to do it. You know, if we talk about, you know, all of the different math and whatnot that Gato has to do in order to make the G1 work, it is absolutely possible. The door is wide open right now, I would say, for these guys, both in terms of their presentation and also in terms of their performances, to seem like that just undeniable next guy who needs to be being handed the baton on January 4th, so that on January 5th, in a post-Tanahashi world, they're as close to the top of the heap as you can be.
Yeah, I would say I'm going into this a lot of the same way I did last year, and I don't know if that's the best thing, where it's, like I compared it, it's like this jump ball, where you don't know who is going to be that, whether it's Umino, whether it's Uemura, whether it's Yota Tsuji, whoever it is, who is going to be that one to really grab this, and they just go with him. And I don't think there isn't that one definitive guy. And I think you can see in the history of Ghetto's booking, he's very much a long-term play type of booker. And sometimes like that can net you great results when the final story is told. The other side is what we've seen in Noah this year with an Ozawa, that they, this was not a 5-year project. This was not a 2-year project. This was the rocket is being put on this guy and the audience is just desiring, like, seeing a young superstar being developed in front of them. This guy rose to the occasion, and Noah has, you know, Noah's not knocking everybody dead, but they are certainly on a lot better footing through this bold booking decision. And I think New Japan needs some of that bold booking of just, hey, you've got the candidates. This is our guy. We're going full steam ahead. And I can't say that any of them have necessarily jumped out. And this is another year to kind of look at that if there's a more concentrated effort toward one of these guys, whether it be Uemura or Tsuji or a more out of left field pick.
Yeah, and even if you do want to subscribe to the idea that, you know, Aaron Wolf has been this project waiting in the wings for the last year or 2 years or however long this debut has been planned for, and even, let's say, in a short space of time, the training goes fantastically well and you do have a really excellent in-ring performer ready to start mixing it up in 2026, he's got to have opponents, right? He's got to have people whose, you know, programs of which are going to be something of substance, right? He needs to have somebody to work with there, presumably people with a bit more experience to guide him through the early phases of his career. So even if you are putting all of your eggs into the Aaron Wolf project, and again, it's, for me, it's been very, very interesting to watch the different presentation, almost the different handling of Wolf, almost being presented by like the front office as sort of this, you know, multimedia or kind of transcendental sort of presence who the average, you know, person in Japan is familiar with. And therefore, you know, Gato, you're not going to spend 3 years having this guy wear black trunks and then sending him off to RevPro or whatever it happens to be. Even if there is like kind of a different handling of Wolf there, it does kind of put into sharp relief. Exactly. The jump ball metaphor is a really good one sort of there about the fact that we haven't really gotten that sense. We haven't really gotten that real charge forward with any of those guys. I still think Tsuji is as close to the top of the heap as anybody is. You know, has he kind of fallen off a little bit over the last year, cooled a bit? Yeah, somewhat, but he's also come through in some really big spots and some big programs. I think Uemura has also stepped up in a short space of time after recouping from the injury. You're starting to see crowds really respond to the very, very natural, traditional babyface charisma that he has.
They feel like the one, too, I think, on most people's like depth chart. I would say for, you know, we're certainly viewing this through a lot of the, like, what is the North American buzz going to be for the G1? I think in a post AEW world, like, you have seen the G1, you know, it has been slotted down on the priority list for people. I think that's going to be especially so this year. There's just such a a content war at the moment to be a wrestling consumer in North America. If you're following WWE and AEW, that I'm curious to see what level New Japan is able to attract over the next month.
Yeah.
If people are just going to stop in, or if this is just 19 shows, it's pretty daunting. Like, it's like you're either in or you're out. Like, some people are just those, if I can't follow all of it, then I'm not going to follow any of it. But in Japan, certainly the big story, this G1 is going to be the final one of Hiroshi Tanahashi. And what is your sense of the handling of Tanahashi? Are we going to see sort of a Ricky Choshu 96? He's able to turn the clock back and he's like one of the massive figures in the G1. Or is this going to be closer to like a Yuji Nagata in 2017 where, you know, he's the respectable elder having his last G1, but he's probably not going to be a player come the final three nights?
Yeah, I as much as there would be something really interesting and exciting about that last real glorious push there, I just don't know that, you know, I mean, I think we saw it with the desire to get the belt off of Naito so quickly after the G1 last year. I think, you know, people understand just how dire the physical condition of Tanahashi is. I think there's also the fact that, I mean, some people were sort of taught, like, could you have him win and could you have him be, you know, retire, you know, with the title challenge at the Dome? I think he's already drawing what he's drawing at the Dome doing that, and that you know, you don't need to have the title match, involved in that. I think something closer to the Nagata run is quite probable. Chris Samsa of Sport of Pro Wrestling made the great point, which is that Tanahashi is currently sitting at 96 career G1 wins. So the road to just get to 3 and finish with 100, that seems like a manageable goal. That
four,
seems
four
like
wins. Something. Then the man should have 4 wins in this.
Yeah. So, you know, and his last one, his last match will be against Evil. So, you know, having him kind of in a very traditional sort of way, knock Evil out on the last night. I think that sort of makes sense. You know, you can have him doing the honors for both Oiwa and Uemura after recently pinning them. You know, he's being counted on to draw in the smaller towns, you know, and just hopefully not have his kneecaps fly off into the 5th row, you know, midway through the tournament. So those would be the 3 matches there, the Evil, the Uemura, and the Oiwa ones I kind of have circled for his important ones. But yeah, I would expect him to pick up, you know, those 4 wins and get to 100 there.
Yeah, so we'll go through the A block here. Of course, Tanahashi, one of the primary figures in the A block, along with the additions of Yuya Uemura, Oleg Bolton, Yota Tsuji, Ryohei Oiwa, Callum Newman, David Finlay, Evil Sonata, and the late to qualify Taichi, who is replacing E Honda in this A block. Tanahashi will be the oldest man in the tournament at 48. According to New Japan's listings, he's got 5 main events on this G1 with Taichi, David Finlay, Ryohei Oiwa, Yuya Uemura, which will be a rematch from Dominion, and Yota Tsuji. Some first-time matches he will have with Oiwa, Newman, and Finlay. And, you know, he's coming off last year. He did 6 points. And I guess the question will be just how much of a player he is in this. I tend to lean towards you. I would certainly not want him to be kind of out of the running like midway through, because I think it's a story that can at least get you through to the latter stages. But a lot is being asked of Tanahashi to do 9 matches. Like, you can have your, you know, this guy should pick his spots. And the fact that they're putting him in 5 main events, that sounds ambitious right there. I would think it's almost a lock that Uemura gets a big win over Tanahashi, and you want his losses to be significant rather than just a wave of losses and they don't have a full meaning to them. But the 100 storyline I wasn't aware of, and that is something that is, you know, kind of when we talk about what are the participation trophies in the G1, they find these little stories, and that's a good one for Tanahashi.
Yeah, I very much agree.
How about Taichi in this? Are you of the impression that he is just going to assume the booking Goto was to have? Or like his match with Tomohiro Ishii at the end of this gauntlet, that might be on par with what the best the G1 is going to present. I mean, these two went all out for this match. And I think that if there's going to be a sentimental favorite that I do have the faith can go at a level, it's 45-year-old Taichi, who I think could have like a sleeper tournament.
Yeah, no, I don't know that they'll necessarily just be able to copy and paste every single one of the Goto wins and losses. I'm sure, you know, Gato had to do some last minute, you know, little scribbling on the back of the napkin there. And I will say that, you know, as much as myself, Karen, and a lot of other folks have been kind of critical of, you know, Gato just effectively losing his fastball as a booker. He's been, you know, he's been doing it for what, 15, 16, 17 years, at least I think about 10 years just by himself after Jado stepped down. That's a hell of a long time. I will say this, the actual construction of like the G1 mat, even if there is some sort of a regime change or whatever, you know, have him kind of be the Pat Patterson of the Rumble, you know, just still there to kind of make all this math work. But yeah, the Taichi thing is really interesting because you have really one of the few organically hot wrestlers domestically right now, which is maybe weird for North American fans who bump in and out of New Japan to sort of hear, but there's just been a real organic groundswell behind Taichi over the last, I don't know, 9 months or a year or something like that. I mean, the Goto Street Fighter news, man, the conspiracy theories about the nature of Goto's injury and Taichi's sub in. After that, the loss to Newman initially, he sort of even had some backstage comments sort of saying, you know, well, maybe, you know, I'm not there this year, but I'm at the ready. If something comes up, he almost even seemed to kind of breadcrumb that. His hometown match in Hokkaido on night one has him in one of those main events, against Tanahashi. And then he also has an important match, I would say, in his, you know, nominal 4/5 guys stablemate, in Uemura the next night in Hokkaido. We also will have, him going out for revenge against Sonata after the defection from Just Four Guys there as well. I think you're going to see, kind of like Tanahashi, there is going to be a real sort of sentimental attachment to Tai Chi as this last minute underdog. I don't know. Do I have him? I'm trying to remember my like kind of fantasy booking here. No, I don't have him technically making one of the three spots that they are going to be in the block finals, but I absolutely expect him to be in contention right up until the last day. And again, you know, for the more casual New Japan viewer who is maybe checking this preview out and is thinking about kind of, you know, picking and choosing or whatever, yeah, don't sleep on Tai Chi. That match with Ishii that wasn't an accident. That wasn't a fluke. He's had a couple of weaker G1s over the last 5 years, but overall, the very Kawada-inspired work that he's been doing over the last 4 or 5 years in these tournaments has really kept me going, you know, kind of.
That the famous Kota Ibushi match, the kickboxing match that they had, like, you know, Tai Chi is like definitely has that idea of catering, like the different match styles as a strength that he will vary up, like the presentation of different matches to give like sort of a flavor to his different matches. I think he's a great addition. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, reverence for Tomohiro Ishii, but much like Tanahashi, I would be looking at that, like, this is a 49-year-old that I think people really take for granted of, like, the toll that this tournament takes on a lot of individuals.
Yeah, so, in Ishii's case, there's been rumblings that he's been trying to sort of back out of at least the G1, and as you sort of said with Tanahashi, pick his spots, because when he does, when, you know, you give Ishii, like, hey, we need you for, like, 8 or 9 big matches this year, can you just show up for those? He absolutely does.
He's like, I'll take a booking with the Rizzler and Big Justice.
Yes, yes.
You know what? So Yuya Uemura, it's obviously another big G1 for him. Last year was his first, but of course had to withdraw due to the injury when he was at 8 points, missed all the rest of the year, came back in February. And as we mentioned, he had the loss to Tanahashi at Dominion. They'll rematch on August the 1st, and he's got rematches with Tanahashi, or sorry, main events, I should say, with Tanahashi. He also has one with David Finlay coming up on August 7th among them. So, you know, it's a big spotlight, I would say, on Yuya Uemura. In terms of, I would say, like, him and Tsuji, I think all eyes are on these two in particular in this tournament.
Yeah, that's right. And the Finlay match is especially important because Finlay did eliminate Uemura in the New Japan Cup this year as well. So there's something to that as well. I think the injury in the G1 last year, it seemed to sort of forestall the kind of the more tempered sort of push, not a rocket strap, but a more sort of tempered push of a character like Uemura that normally I would be absolutely in favor of and really drawn into in a company which wasn't absolutely starving for young talent at the top. You know, under normal circumstances, I would have said the handling of Uemura up until that point had been really solid. But yeah, maybe more so than any of the younger guys this year, I think, with the possible exception of however we want to evaluate, you know, Gabe Kidd, from the Omega match forward, crowds are really getting behind Uemura, responding to the type of work, responding to the very straightforward, babyface presentation that he has. I don't necessarily have him winning the block in the way I have it laid up, but I think he's definitely, in the playoffs. Absolutely. The Tsuji match is what I think, I mean, fine. There's the Tanahashi match where obviously I think we sort of expect Tanahashi, you know, to make him look like $1 million. That you know, very fluky roll up win that Tanahashi had over him at Dominion is something that has to be paid back again. Out for blood with Finlay, and then really it's going to be that Tsuji match that, you know, from day one, you know, at Wrestle Kingdom, I believe it was that their first kind of post graduation match.
I failed to mention they're headlining July 22nd, which I mean could be the biggest match of the tournament for both of them. I think it's very very notable that they're headlining that show in Sendai. That's a real big one.
Yeah. That's a match kind of that I would put on par with the Gabe Kidd Tsuji match at New Beginning in terms of just these are guys trying to present themselves as the face and future of this company and representing it in their own way.
I should rewind. I wanted to do this at the start. We should just go over the format because it usually changes every year of what they did. I think they have solidified back to the 2-block system after trying the 4 blocks 2 years ago, but we have 2 blocks, 10 participants each. And so the wrinkle on this year is that the first place finishers in each block get byes to the semifinals, and then Number two faces number three in opposite blocks in the quarters. They advance to the semis, and then they create the final with the last two nights at the Ariake Arena in Tokyo.
Yeah, I like the fact that this year they are crossing the blocks for that play-in. You have, you know, A3 versus B2, A2 versus B3. So we aren't repeating matches in that kind of like wild card play-in the way we did last year. But the part of me that does kind of enjoy a more broadly spread block field with maybe only two or three guys in competition per block down the stretch, you know, I'm not that nuts about, you know, keeping everybody save your absolute just, you know, balancing pin eaters technically alive until the last day or two, especially when you know that, you know, your Naritas, your Yoshihashis have no shot. You also have the scenario of someone like Tsuji, who was technically in third, making it all the way to the finals last year.
Right.
That sort of Cinderella story can be interesting, I would say, in like a baseball season when it's, you know, 162 games plus a lengthy playoff and whatnot. Fine. There is something about that team that was in second or third in their division, clawing and fighting their way back in. But in this sort of emergency of kind of elevation and a dearth of talent up at the top, I would love to see those chosen three or four guys with just one or two vets mixed in, just shooting, blasting ahead of everyone, and then just kind of scrambling with one another to rack up wins each night and stay ahead of the bulk of the block. So whether they will do that or not, or maybe one of those blocks, you know, is kind of more spread out and gradiated, and one is just the absolute schmoz with technically everybody in contention right up until the last night. We'll see.
How much Port Ellen would you be willing to wager that Tsuji and Uemura are going to qualify for the playoff round?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a lock. I think my
Port Ellen
stories would be safe in there. Yeah.
We kind of talked about Tsuji, but I mean, he's, you know, I replicate a lot of what we just said about Uemura. You know, he went to the finals last year with Zach. I do not see a repeat of last year's final coming back, but I would imagine Tsuji is going to be very protected in this tournament.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, Rewind Away goes back to review the best of the WWF Volume 16. We'll also have reviews of UFC 318, TNA Slammiversary, a special Ask Away edition, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. Oleg Bolton's a very interesting one. Last year, I thought there was a lot more doubt of him going in. It was a very big trial by fire for Oleg Bolton. And I would say he came out of it with, a solid like B+ performance, I would say, in the G1. Like, room for improvement, but certainly above, I would say, everyone's expectations. And he's improved that much more over the last year. He's coming in as the never openweight champion. And he's an interesting one in many ways. I think the handling of Oleg Bolton is going to inform a lot of how they handle Aaron Wolf. And it's like Oleg Bolton was the test case, and now we're going to go just that much more with Aaron Wolf. So Bolton, you know, for a 32-year-old, it's, you know, I have high hopes for Bolton in this one as well. Maybe not quite playoff bound, but definitely a player that you anticipate gets some key wins in all of this.
Yeah. I very much feel the same way with, you know, him kind of being the model that I imagine they're going to try to replicate with Wolf. And there's, you know, there's an outside chance that he might be the opponent for Wolf at the Dome. I think it's much more likely to be Okan. You know, I think having him being cemented with this, you know, solid never rain is a good spot for him right now, so long as sufficiently credible opponents can be found for him after this tournament, coming out of this tournament. I think right now hovering somewhere between the never and the global, you know, position is where I'd want him to be. His last block match is against Tai Chi. So if you have Tai Chi beating him to stay alive at the beginning of that card, but then being eliminated in a tiebreaker or whatever it is, you know, in a match that he doesn't control later on, that could set up a very nice never program for Bolton coming out of there. And I think that that's chemistry that would work. And he's also got, again, the Tanahashi match will be important, you know, being, you know, the fact that they held the prestigious never six-man titles together. Yes. But then also the fact that he did bounce Tanahashi out of the G1 qualifier last year as well. So, yeah, no, I think that the model for Bolton is something that we are going to see more of. It's a little bit different than what we saw with Fujita and what is, seems to be happening now with Daiki Nagai, and kind of the, you know, Young Lion being kind of absorbed into a faction rather than going on excursion. We've just sort of had this kind of ad hoc graduation from within Hontai, but it's an interesting model for how New Japan is thinking about testing out different approaches of elevating talent. And yeah, I think a B+ rating for Bolton is pretty fair so far. He's had a lot of good matches this year. The A block has a lot of interesting, you know, just bell to bell pairings for him, I think.
I'll group these two together. We have Ryohei Oiwa making his first G1 appearance, and he's got a main event with Tanahashi on July 27th in Nagoya. And then Callum Newman, who at 22, his second G1, he got two wins in last year's tournament, beating Shota Umino and Shingo Takagi. And I guess Oiwa, I mean, I'm always happy when we get some of those debuting participants in the G1. We have Drilla Maloney in the B block that we'll get to. What are some of your thoughts on these two, and where do you see their kind of a pathway?
Newman, well, I'll start with Newman. He's in a bit of a weird position compared to a lot of the younger guys that we really have our eyes on, in that compared to somebody like, you know, like that we were just talking about, it feels like a lot of the developmental landmarks that you would want a young wrestler to have almost happened kind of like out of sequence or a little bit too early for Newman. Never mind the fact that, you know, you have the very difficult position of a departing Will Ospreay, you know, basically saying he's the next me, take care of him on the way out, which, I mean, you know, big shoes to fill. You know,
have you ever seen the movie Beer Fest?
I have not. Oh. I'm aware of the existence of it, but
it's a classic movie where they kill off this very lovable character, Landfill. And then later in the movie, you know, he's such a popular character. It turns out when they go to the funeral, he's got an exact twin brother. Endears himself to the friends, and he's like, guys, would you mind calling me Landfill? So they replace the character with the exact same character.
Snowball 2 in The Simpsons, same principle there.
Okay, yeah, there you have it.
The cat just subs in for the first cat.
That's the analysis you get here from Bruce Lord and John Pollock.
he had, you know, his first G1 was when he was still very, very new to Japan, to New Japan. You know, the tag title reign that seemingly fell into his lap, and certainly the Goto title challenge, which really fell into his lap after the Cobb business. I think Newman will end up with a couple of more wins than the two he got last year, but not too much more. I don't know that there are any super important matches for him in the here and now. The first timers with Uemura, Oleg, Oiwa, and Tsuji, he's got Tsuji on the last night. You know, you want to look at those in terms of the chemistry and presentation that he has, rather than immediate story or program builders. I'd be looking for those as just sort of, what can we do with these two guys together? He's in a position, and we saw this with the Goto match and a few of his other recent matches, where he is having to sort of adjust the, you know, the super speedy, you know, jacked up light heavyweight style, that, you know, he kind of cut his teeth on and find different paces, no pun intended, with him. So seeing how he is able to do that with those guys is really what I'm going to be looking for with Newman, more than the actual like win loss record or whatever it might be. In terms of Oiwa, we're looking at somebody who, I don't know about you, we were talking about Noah a minute ago. Oiwa felt so much more electric in that run that he had, in Noah. There have been glimpses of greatness in some of his matches since then. The Zach and Takeshita matches this year were a cut above, but, you know, that's, you know, not difficult to have a great match with those guys. I don't know if it's a question of intensity or just the connective tissue between moments. There's just been something a little bit lacking with Oiwa this year. There are so many components in this guy that I love. The look, the colors. I'm all for the hair, by the way. I love the kind of the layered mullet with the two color. I love it. The moveset, the grip, the doctor bomb. You know, if like W.H. Park, you're the sort of person who thinks that 90s All Japan is just the pinnacle of wrestling, this is a guy who's very clearly indebted to that history, but it just hasn't quite gelled yet. I think given his junior status compared to Tsuji and Uemura, he'll have a middling record, but I'm looking for him to just really pour it on in terms of bell to bell. I just want this guy going all out here, and kind of reminding us of that guy that we saw just lighting it up on Noah on Excursion. So in that sense, and kind of what I have flagged for him, it's kind of all of the matches that are just like the pressure's on him. But certainly the first time match with Uemura in a Korakuen semi-main, at Oda City, and then he has a first time match with Tsuji at Oda City as well. So those are the two ones where I'm looking for real stellar performances from him, hopefully.
Yeah, like to me, the jury's still out on Oiwa. If you're asking me, gun to my head, does he get slotted in the kind of Tsuji Uemura optimistic bin versus the Narita I have written off bin? It's more towards the former. But it's part of the intrigue of a tournament like this. Yeah. If he comes out and has several big performances, it's going to accentuate that optimism. But it's also easy to sort of get lost in the shuffle if you don't have any standout performances as well. With Callum Newman, like sometimes it is the booking of a quantitative finish in terms of points. Others, it's the qualitative wins where maybe it's not a ton of wins, but he gets that one or two real significant ones that are, it's kind of, it is your participation trophy you get coming out of this, that Newman gets a big win over a Tanahashi or something like that. That's ultimately, you know, their big achievement in the G1. That's kind of where I see Newman in this one. David Finley, this will be his fourth G1, won the B block last year, losing to Tsuji in the semifinals. They will have a rematch on August the 7th. Finley is always going to be a very well-protected performer. Him going to the playoffs, I think, is very conceivable. Where are we with David Finley, Bruce?
He's had a really, really interesting kind of, you know, last 12 months. On the one hand, he's been this integral part of a huge number of New Japan programs and storylines, whether it's the Goto matches, you know, and making, you know, Goto's son, you know, the number one prospect of 2035, feuding with Tsuji over the global belt, or this just interminable, you know, House of Torture War Dog stuff, which doesn't ever seem over, but, you know, whatever. But at the same time, he's sat out on a number of tours over the last, 12 months or so. So the general kind of slow creeping towards the baby facing, or at least the tweener status of the War Dogs that we've seen, hasn't really applied to Finley. So it's a bit strange. Like I've said on shows with Karen, like he's kind of the closest thing the company has to a non House of Torture heel in the company right now. I think he gets to the playoffs. I don't think he goes to the final, but as he's done in the past, he's going to do his damnedest to great matches out of the younger guys. So I think the Finley matches will be really important for your Oiwas and your Uemuras, even more so than for Finley himself. If that makes sense, right? Like again, he does not necessarily have the showiest style. He does not have, you know, the just leaping off the page presentation or charisma of whichever number of a previous Bullet Club faction leaders that you'd want. But if you're paying attention to just the day in, day out of New Japan, this guy's matches are consistently great. Like, I would almost compare it to, you know, what we were seeing with Goto a few years ago as just this, like, really kind of overlooked soldier who's just out there having great, great matches.
Elements of Jay White, too, I would say.
Sure,
all of that.
Yes.
Like, technically, bell to bell, very strong, very consistent, undervalued at some times, and not the flashiest, like, name either, but someone that I think they look at as, you know, a key guy for their current crop of talent. Yep. And the other two, to round out the A block, can't talk without one without the other. It is Evil and Sonata together here. So Evil, this will be his 10th G1.
Oh my God.
Of course, it has now been 8 years since that famous win over Okada. Maybe the only high point of Evil's G1 run. Went to the semifinals in 23, finished with 10 points a year ago. Drop what you're doing July 22nd when we get Sonata and Evil together in Sendai.
Oh, yeah.
And Sonata himself, who is guys just kind of just, you know, he is out there for, I think, his enjoyment at this point. He's just kind of going with the flow. We'll get some guitars. We'll get some wild outfits. And he does have a match with Tanahashi on August 7th. I'm not awaiting with bated breath the involvement of these two. We will see if there is some wild presentation of either. But I mean, I'm past the point of looking at Sonata as part of the company's like championship picture. I think he's a middle card performer. And Evil's Evil. Like, he has his proponents and roles on these cards, but at 38, I'm not building things around Evil either.
No. The two or three matches a year that you could kind of count on Sonata to deliver, those have dried up since that bicep injury. You know, he just feels like you said, he's there for himself or whatever, both in the War Dogs presentation, which didn't make much sense, and then similarly House of Torture. It's messed up to say, but, you know, he's basically, for, you know, somebody who was like a world champ, what, a year and a half ago, you know, he's basically in the Yujiro role in this block, which is a horrific thing to say, right?
That's probably the most damning assignment you can give to a performer at this point.
Tell me
the Yujiro of anything
here,
is not a compliment.
Yeah, no, but this is what we get. We get, you know, Yujiro with the Mario boots and the Jeff Jarrett chair shots. Evil, you know, here to be a spoiler for a couple of baby faces and then to give everybody a feel good moment with Tanahashi knocking him out on the last night, I would say.
And gives me my excuse to rant and rave about the lack of DQs in a tournament that DQs are a huge part of the whole points assignment. We have that. We're going to get into the B block. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I'm way more intrigued by the B block than the A block. Mm. Like, it's, yes, you have Tsuji, you have Uemura, you have Bolton. I'm not saying the A block is dire, and it's got Tanahashi, which may end up being like the biggest story of the whole G1. So it's not like it's the desert here seeking a drink of water. I think we're going to have a lot more dynamic matches and stories in the B block, but we will see. Where's your overall attitude towards the A block?
Well, I think like the A block, I feel, is going to be a little bit more like, just in terms of my own personal bell to bell preferences, I'm probably going to enjoy the matches a little bit more in A, but there's definitely the case for like weirder chemistry and more intriguing and curious matchups happening in the B block. I don't have my list of all the first timers up in front of me right now, but there's a bunch of just really weird styles clashes in the B block that you don't necessarily get in the A block, which is a little bit made more of kind of
I'm being a little
style.
Too harsh on the A block. Like there is elements to be had in this A block that I think will turn out, but like I'm just looking at this B block. It's like, you know, you have 9 Takeshita matches, for instance. You've got Shingo in this one. You've got 9 Zach matches. You've got Gabe Kidd with a lot of interesting here. Bruce's guy, Shota Umino, is going to have to show out. Will we get the Scooter in any of the round
of
matches?
God. I mean,
all of these questions.
He's back. He's back to handing out bracelets and glow sticks. After the whole shaved head thing, the whole rebirth of it, we're just back to where we were. We're back to where we were.
How many viewing parties have been set up in and around British Columbia for El Fantasmo. I mean, the pride of British Columbia returning
absolutely.
For yet another G1.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a weirder and wackier block that has a lot more just question marks attached to it. And, you know, and obviously when you throw in Takeshita, you know, as somebody who has, I think, six, you know, first time matches there. Any first time to catch the singles match, I feel, is just sort of appointment viewing for a serious, you know, pro fan.
Did you see the Bandido match with Takeshita last week?
I did. I managed to get that
like,
in.
That's your I'm taking the next 6 weeks off farewell match that mm-hmm. very well could end up people's match of the year.
Yes, I absolutely. And like we'll get into that when we get to Takeshita in particular, but he is such an intriguing he feels like obviously he's working in the three companies right now, but just he as a quantity feels like something that kind of just operates outside of the usual barriers of how we sort of think about how a promotion presents a certain character, right? It's almost a weird throwback to somebody who was just a star in multiple territories at the same time. And we kind of have to rewire or rethink how you approach booking and presenting someone like that.
Yeah, we can even start with Takeshita. He's probably the most dynamic performer in this block. And as we talk about like the jump ball, like in another set of circumstances, like New Japan, they've got the guy in Takeshita, but because of like we do not have exclusivity on this guy, we really can't make him that guy. Because in another era, like that is the person that this company is being built around. A 30-year-old that could easily lay claim to the best wrestler in the world and was the star of last year's G1, went to the quarters. And this year, I mean, you've got main events with Takagi, with Zach on the July 30th, Umino on August 8th, and say nothing of like I'm looking forward to Takeshita and Drilla Maloney have a singles match. Like all of these are going to be like Takeshita and Gabe Kidd. I mean, if this guy is not the performer of the G1, then we're going to have some unbelievable performances from somebody else to unseat him for that role. But I like it's the closest to an outsider that they have that always adds a spark. And you mentioned the first time matches. That's always an intrigue of the G1. So I think Takeshita is going to be the person that is maybe going to gauge what the overall worldwide interest is of the G1 and how many people are going to follow this through Takeshita.
Yeah. No, there are no flaws in his game right now. You know,
the man can even sing The Cure. Did you catch that?
No. This was at
AEW karaoke. Got up there. He can do a pretty damn good rendition of Friday.
Oh my God. Okay. But
this is your homework as soon as we're done recording this. You will find this online.
One of my two or three favorite wrestlers right now is singing my favorite band of all time. Yeah. Okay. I gotta search that out. Okay. There we go. Yeah. No flaws, you know, to clearly his musical choices or, you know, his preference in American, cinnamon based confectionery. He works as a heel. He works as a babyface. The offense is as explosive, for lack of a better word, as, you know, kind of peak Omega. The Bandido match that you just brought up, like he can craft a competitive loss with any type of opponent. And he's just over as hell, you know, both in North America and in Japan itself. Because there is no limit, I don't think, to what you can do to him as a challenger or a champion in New Japan as well as AEW. And then you have all of these fresh matches here. This is, you know, I don't know. I'm hearing buzz. I'm hearing rumors. I'm hearing, you know, kind of mutterings and whatnot. Given that we have this precedent set by Zach last year with the KOPW thing, I am actually, this is going to be a little bit controversial. I actually have Takeshita as my pick to go to the finals. And technically, I am going to have him going over Tsuji as the overall tournament winner. And I get it. Like there's the outsider thing. There's the question of that. But I think you have having Takeshita as an established quality already there to sort of test and sharpen the likes of a Tsuji, who I think will ultimately sort of come out of this kind of on top and whatnot. If we're kind of like really mapping things out here and galaxy braining everything, I just don't see Zach main eventing the Dome for a second year in a row. I see a title change happening before then. And I'm wondering if we are maybe going to be seeing Tsuji Takeshita as nominally the main event, or at least the title match, with obviously whatever they're doing with Tanahashi going ahead of that.
And you would see Zach maybe losing the belt at like King of Pro Wrestling.
At KOPW or something along those lines, yes, after losing to Takeshita.
I don't think that's a wild forecast at all. Like, there's nothing preventing it. It's just their own, like, you can put a title or just put Takeshita into a big match. It comes with some limitations, but it's not like he's with a foreign promotion. It is one of your partners that, in theory, you would be able to work out dates, and it's like he's not going to be on every date on every tour, but doesn't necessarily need to be either. And like, he is that guy. He checks off every box other than we don't have exclusivity on him. And I don't think that's disqualifying in modern day New Japan booking when it comes to the reality of things.
They don't have that luxury. They don't have that luxury.
And if you're looking at the landscape, Takeshita is probably going to be a template for a number of performers that, like, the Okada signing, I said at the time, this is going to be a seismic move because it really does open the door that a lot of these Japanese performers that in another generation would be loyalists till their retirement, that's not always going to be the case. And when they see, you know, becoming a big star in the U.S., that's going to be enticing to a lot of people. And you have to look at, hey, we can put all this stock in a David Finley or an Oleg Bolton. There's always that fear that, you know, these foreigners might go elsewhere, but it's also the nativists as well, that a Umino or anybody could also look at that.
And if you have, I don't know the details of how, when, or under what circumstances the whole multi-promotion contract situation was sussed out. But if you have Takeshita kind of writing his own ticket there, or kind of setting up his own schedule, here's what I want to do, here's what I don't want to do, here's what I can do for this company, here's what I can't do for that other company. If you have that all out front and you have that kind of set up and established as a rhythm, as a schedule that works for him, you're kind of getting ahead of yourself and you're kind of like preventing that big surprise of just like, nope, AJ Styles and Nakamura walking out on January 5th or whatever it is, right? There isn't that big looming, when is the axe going to fall and when is he going to go to North America, if you already know to what degree he's going to be in North America.
Support for this Post Wrestling Podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from Post Wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/postwrestling.
Gabe Kidd. He finished, this will be his third G1. He finished with 8 points last year, coming into this as the IWGP Global Heavyweight Champion. Maybe people's recipient of the match of the first 6 months of 2025, because that would not include Bandido and Takeshita that happened.
It's still mine. It's still mine. Even with everything that's happened over this past weekend, Kid Omega is still my match of the year thus far. Yep.
I mean, again, when we're talking about like your next, like if I'm just balancing like who is my star of the future, I mean, Kid checks off all the boxes, and I'm not going to repeat myself, but what we just talked about, Kid is a perfect example of somebody that could very much be one of those dual contract type of performers with his further integration into AEW. But I expect a huge tournament for Gabe Kid, and I would say going into the playoffs, he would be on my shortlist.
Yeah, definitely. I absolutely have him into the playoffs. Like I alluded to off the top, he's cooled off a little bit domestically in Japan from since February for a variety of reasons. It's really tough to say to what degree the AEW thing has actually been a factor. I do think that kind of just, you know, wasting time with House of Torture is as much of a factor as whatever perceived, you know, downturn the AEW involvement has had. You know, as Karen Navive said, there's just no elevation to be had in feuding with House of Torture. And whatever he's been doing in terms of, oh, we're fighting over the rights to call ourselves Bullet Club, like that just pales in comparison to the real, like, iron sharpens iron feud you have with Tsuji, rooted in this grudging respect that they both show for each other and this desire, you know, to show out for Shin Nahan and bleed cerulean blue. Even though he's cooled off a little bit since February, we're still looking at somebody who is just capable of whipping crowds up at a moment's notice, like we saw at the Dome. And it won't take, you know, more than a couple of really, really great matches, I think, in this tournament, to have everybody just kind of, who cares about the Death Rider stuff, and have him coming out of this, even if you don't have him winning the tournament, with some really hot global title programs coming out of this. And given that he is still cementing this global title reign, you know, and you do have kind of Zach and Umino jostling for position in this block as well. You know, I don't think he's necessarily entirely making it all the way out, but it's very, very close. I'm going to be fretting over that. He's really like him, Umino, and Zach kind of in the B block are kind of my last little question marks that I sort of have as soon as I got off the horn with you. I'm going to be filling out my bracket and getting it in, by that deadline there. I think, you know, if you kind of pay attention to some of the back channel scuttlebutt and whatnot, the very real heat that we saw between him and Shota Umino last year, really, everybody's going to be looking for, you know, receipts and potatoes in that match. I think, you could have Shingo beat him, in a rematch of the awesome tournament match that they had last year to set up a challenge for the global belt. That's a match I'd absolutely love to see at KOPW, wherever it might be. The Zach match should be great. He and Zach had wonderful chemistry, last year.
This is the main event of night two on Sunday. Yeah. So that will be your 20th match of the weekend.
Okay. That's a good note to finish off. That's a really good note to finish off. I really
think good shot kid beats him. Like, that's one of those, like, it's typical, like, opening weekend, they do like a couple big upsets to set the tone. And that would be, I think that would be one that I would feel pretty confident happens.
And then, you know, a kind of a real, not quite a, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a dream match, but Gabe Kidd versus Takeshita for the first time. That's very exciting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's night one. Yeah. Kid's got a big weekend. Takeshita and Zach on back to back nights in Hokkaido. So that's, it's a very stacked up, first two nights, when you look at this. We'll go over the first two nights, at the end of this and the match lineups. Let's get to, the main event for Bruce Lord's purposes. Shota Umino, the 28-year-old competing in his third G1, finished with 8 points last year, but of course famously made his way to Wrestle Kingdom 19 on the Shota scooter, making his way out. And after, a marathon match, losing to Zack Sabre Jr. I was not as down on the match as others, but here we are. This man was, and What is your prognostication here? Because I do not want to make the determination factor here, because this guy is one joining House of Torture move away from being, which is not the craziest idea I could see with this Shota character. Where are we on the Shota Umino Express?
To paraphrase, I think we should leave. We just got to, like, figure out what Shota's deal is. And he doesn't know what that deal is. The company doesn't know what that deal is. I won't necessarily relitigate everything I said about the motorbike, or what I was just, you know, again, kind of going back to kissing babies and handing out glow sticks. You know, he's in this very kind of water treading tag team with LP right now. You know, I will say he's had a couple of good matches this year with Finley and Shingo, where I would say in both of those cases, credit where credit is due, he's actually shown up for those rather than just being carried. The Finley one in particular was maybe the actual best singles performance I've ever seen out of him. But at this point, there's no way that you can count on that on a nightly basis on something as long and grueling as the G1. And at the end of the day, we are looking at somebody who still feels, I think, to a huge portion of the fan base in North America as well as in Japan, like an entitled Nepo baby, but who keeps being booked as though he is this determined, plucky underdog, never gives up baby face. And those two things are just so discordant with one another. I think he makes it to the playoffs, but gets knocked out very, very quickly in the play-in match. He's got a rematch with Shingo. Shingo just brutalized him at Dontaku earlier this year in a match I perversely enjoyed for a couple of reasons.
Of course he did, Bruce.
You know, like I said, you know, we're all going to be watching the Gabe Kidd match under a microscope. And, I will have a morbid fascination in seeing what he and Zach do, when they rewind this year's Wrestle Kingdom main event, on night four in Nagaoka. I think we are going to have him just kind of still kind of being presented in this middling, treading water sort of way. I don't think the company knows that they cannot absolutely boost him the way they did for that absolute disaster earlier this year. And the response to the crowds that the crowds had from the moment that was foreshadowed. I also don't think they're willing quite yet to cut bait and just say, fine, House of Torture, or I mean, him reformulating or reworking House of Torture or something like that, or having a new heel stable, even that, I'd be okay with. I don't think the company is quite at that point with him yet, but we're not too far off from that at this point.
Shingo Takagi is entering his seventh G1. He went to the quarterfinals last year, beating Great O'Conn and then losing in the semis to eventual winner Zack Sabre Jr. Is Takagi still a player going in late? Is Shingo becoming sort of like the Tomohiro Ishii role? Like, he's there to have your big matches, keep up the prestige of the G1, but he's not going to be in our, you know, plans in terms of being a big player throughout the tournament.
I think I'd have him a little bit higher than the Ishii role. I mean, obviously, in terms of match quality, yes, he's absolutely going to bring that. I do have him a little bit stronger than the traditional Ishii presentation, if only because I think there is still real value, pardon me, in him.
I think they've had juice in this guy since the pandemic, where, you know, they went all the way with him and just have not pulled the trigger since. And yeah. I think there's been like opportunity lost with Shingo over these last couple of years.
There has been. And this is why I've been kind of really keeping a close eye on everything post Naito departure. You know, there have been rumblings. There were rumblings of a heel turn or some sort of a new heel faction. We have the ambiguity of what the unaffiliates or the unaffiliated are going to gel into, and whether or not that lineup is going to kind of stay as it is. There's been rumblings of more Dragon Gate business happening either in Japan or him, like, you know, jumping back for a few guests to Moonlight a little bit there after that Shun Skywalker appearance.
How far are we away from Naito doing a GCW shot this year?
Oh, that would not surprise me. Not surprise me.
I think we're almost there.
House of Glory. You're gonna. I think you're gonna see that very, very oddball.
We might get our spring break showdown with Joey Janela next
week. Oh, yeah, the match we've all wanted to see. There we go. Yeah, yeah. He has to deal with, you know, a completely broken down Ibushi and then
Janela's the guy to do that, though. Like, Janela, that is his specialty, okay? He will work around anyone's shortcomings.
Sabu, Ibushi, and now Naito. Oh my god. But yeah, there's still obviously a lot that can be done with, you know, Shingo as a gatekeeper and as a foil. You know, the issue is, I think that, you know, he's always able to, I don't think it's a risk necessarily, of just kind of eating some of the younger guys up in terms of charisma and personality. Like, he's one of those guys where he kind of makes me wish I did speak, you know, any fraction of Japanese, because you can tell that his style of promo is one that absolutely gets over with the crowd. I was kind of expecting, when I was looking, before the blocks were revealed, I was wondering if you might have him in the kind of paired up with Oiwa and Uemura in the same block as them. But I'm wondering if they're kind of counting on him to either maybe try to reheat Inoue with their, you know, with their Dontaku match, rematch rather. You know, he's got a Takeshita rematch, which obviously should be great. And depending on how the actual, you know, tournament winner challenges for the title and when that might be, you might have something of note with Zach coming out of this as well, I think.
Yeah, Zach is coming into his ninth tournament, winning last year's, and of course, you know, adding a whole lot of more interest to his run, regaining the IWGP title from Goto several weeks back. And yeah, I mean, he's being thrown right into the thick of things. He'll face, Red Narita is kind of dipping your toe into the pool. And then we go into Gabe Kidd on the second night. And then he's got matches with Shota Umino on July 23rd and El Fantasmo July 26th. And then we get to Zack Sabre Jr., Konosuke Takeshita July 30th. So obviously it is always one of the more interesting figures is the IWGP champion. What matches are set up for the remainder of this year? And I think there's a very solid shot that he is not champion by January 4th as well. But I mean, someone that I think everyone has high hopes for in terms of just, you know, what his addition to the B block is going to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, again, like if we're talking about, you know, Shingo's, you know, ability to kind of tune up and make the younger guys look good, obviously we'll absolutely get that with Zach as well. It's really weird to sort of have made this very last second adjustment to him going into this tournament as champ rather than as somebody who I was assuming going into this would be nominally trying to earn the right to challenge Goto to get the championship back. He's got five main events. Which I will also say runs a little bit counter to the slight drop in houses that we saw when he was on top. You know, and it's again, like we've been saying, it's very tempting, you know, to sort of, imagine that the title will be changing at KOPW or elsewhere. Yeah, the matches should be fantastic. And I think you need to have the champ at least make it to the playoffs, yeah, you know, kind absolutely. Of as a pro forma move. But you know, I feel like he feels like a target for a very quick loss of the title, be it from the G1 winner or some other weird and wacky way, of this breaking down. The Takeshita match, the Shingo match, the Kid match, those are all things that could presage a rematch, you know, with a G1 winner or at least just a post G1 challenger. And again, like I said, the Kid match just bell to bell is something that I am really, really looking forward to.
Yeah, Shingo on August 5th in Osaka. I mean, Zach's going to have some really, yep. really big matches in this tournament. Great Okan, El Phantasmo, Yoshihashi. We'll kind of just group these three together, a whole eclectic bunch here. I mean, let's just start off with Great Okan. It's his fourth G1, had 10 points last year, went to the quarterfinals, losing to Takagi. I do not see him going to the playoffs. I don't know where you are at on Great Okan. Like, to me, fine character, but to me, not a difference maker. And I can't say like any of the lineup here. I'm really excited about the Great Okan side of the equations here.
No, the matches themselves are not ones that I'm necessarily looking forward to bell to bell. Like, you know, once in a while, like he really comes up, he, you know, he fucks around and gets a triple double or whatever. You know, he does find his spots every now and again. He's kind of slotted into this very weird utility player role where people who are either being elevated or dropped down the card beat him or lose to him to signal that sort of transition. Like I said, I think he's the most likely opponent with the judo background for Wolf at Wrestle Kingdom, so I don't expect him to be much of a factor here at all. His last match is against Umino, so you could technically, if you really want to look into the weeds, you could have Shooter kind of getting the rubber match on the guy who broke Umino in the first place and prompted him to shave his head. They've traded one win apiece. That's about as much of a significance as you could look for with Okan at this point.
Yeah, Yoshihashi is kind of one of, like, he'll pick up a couple points. We'll see, like, what his level of performances are. He missed last year's tournament, so he's in there to, you know, be the underdog of the block. El Phantasmo is someone, like, I've been very high on this guy. I know Bruce is very geographically aligned here in yes. this one, but it's his fourth G1. I don't see him making the playoffs, but I think this guy is, yeah, I think he's a great babyface, and I think that he's someone that will have some, like, excellent matches in this tournament, quite honestly. So I don't know if there's a higher ceiling for him at this stage of his New Japan tenure, but he's someone that to me does add a lot of value if you're watching these like day to day, Phantasmo does stand out.
He might serve as a spoiler for Gabe Kidd on the last night if you don't necessarily have Kidd making it. It's interesting that I see a lot of kind of like, you know, kind of bile being thrown LP's way from like North or Western New Japan fans. I think because he brings this very kind of North American indie style to New Japan, which is not what they're necessarily looking for. But those are the things that have absolutely endeared him, I think, to the Japanese crowd. The tag team with Umino is weird because it's like LP is good at the things they seem to want Umino to be good at in terms of the crowd work and everything. He's there to eat pins. You know, you could have maybe Maloney or Yoshihashi coming out with a TV title challenge. That's about as much as I could say for LP.
Yeah, he'll face Umino and Takeshita opening weekend and faces Zach July 26th. And then rounding out...
Which is also, I mean, the Takeshita match is also one to really watch because I think that was kind of the consensus favorite for match, or one of the consensus favorites for match of the year of the tournament last year.
We'll end off with Ren Narita. He's in his third G1. He finished with 10 points last year. I don't know. With Ren Narita, I mean, he is he holding on by a thread at this point, or has that thread been severed, Bruce?
No, yeah, it's rinse repeat, same as last year, same as every House of Torture tournament entrant. His last match is against Takeshita, who is as much of a lock for the playoffs, if not the top spot, as anyone. So I don't even see him playing spoiler at the end. He's there to hand dirty losses to contenders to make the math work. That, you know, those it's the bad luck folly spot. You know, LP and Kid found ways of getting about as good of a decent singles match as you can get with him out of the last year. I can't call those important, but my level of apathy will be maybe a little bit reduced. We do also still have Drilla to talk
about
as well.
And that's who I was going to end off with. G1 debut. I'm really looking forward to him. This is going to be the biggest month of his career coming up, and he has the opportunity to show out. He has made, I think, like a pretty good transition to heavyweight this year. They put him in a lot of key positions, but none bigger than this. Like, he's going to have a lot of first time singles matches here. And I don't, this is again, the qualitative win that is going to be, you know, maybe he only gets one or two wins in this, but it should be like, maybe he is going to be like the junior heavyweight that has the long road transitioning, eats a bunch of losses, but then you get the big sentimental victory at some point. But it's more so going to be the performances that are graded from Drilla Maloney rather than how much he's booked to go over anyone.
Yeah. And he's been giving just real, no nonsense, mid-card heavy hitting for the past year. And I have really, really enjoyed that presentation. And I'm looking for that to continue. Basically, he's kind of, I think, fulfilling the sort of role that, you know, New Japan really wants Hanare to be filling in, were it not for all of the injuries that poor guy's been snaked by.
That guy's a terrible look.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I think Maloney will get 3 or 4 wins and will just be really entertaining and kind of keep people engaged, you know, the whole way down the line.
They've really protected that finisher. Like, they've made the Drilla Killer feel absolutely like it's like the like one of the more protected finishers in G1 or in New Japan.
How good was that that qualifying match, you know, with Ishii, where he just had to hit it on him twice just to make sure, you know, the man has no neck. So even though it's the most protected one, he gets a second one as a courtesy.
Yeah, he took 2 inches off of Tomohiro Ishii.
He and Shingo had a really good match in New Japan Cup, so the rematch should be good. And then you factor that match is on the last night, and he could be bouncing Shingo from contention.
Him and Kid, like, that should be a lot of fun. Takeshita, like, he could really have some standout performances. I am very excited to see Drilla Maloney in this one.
If you're watching the G1 for just actual bell-to-bell, you know, match quality,
WH and I think for the entirety of our friendship, we have always discussed the junior heavyweight plight of this G1. If it is the year that they ever dangle a Hiromu into the mix, a Desperado, where are you on that front? Would that have added some spice to this G1, or do you think that it is, you know, you prefer just the separate tiers?
I would, in the case of those two guys, I would absolutely love to see that happen, because it would indicate that there's actually some movement within the junior division as well. I mean, Hiromu just feels completely just, you know, spent in terms of, not even in terms of the matches, but just in terms of like the real diminishment of fan interest in that guy. I mean, you know, they still get up for him and everything, but he just does not feel like that really special, unique performer that he was a few years ago, just because he's run every program that it's possible to run so many times. You know, Desperado is, you know, in addition to Taichi, like, maybe the most organically over guy in this company right now. And he's your junior champ that you just had defeat the up and comer in Fujita. And I have to presume that that's only happening because you're going to spin him off into a singles program with a House of Torture pilled Doki, which is just, it's a waste of Doki. It's a waste of, you know, the way that people get into Desperado. Yeah, I mean, I would have loved if you know, on Dominion, when we were running down the blocks, we saw Desperado's face flash up there. I would have been overjoyed to have seen that. But sadly, this company is very hidebound in a lot of ways. And certainly the positioning of those two guys is one of those.
So it will kick off on Saturday, the first of 19 shows, which we will have coverage of every single one of them. So the first night in Hokkaido, the top matches, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Taichi scheduled to headline. Underneath it, Zack Sabre Jr. against Ren Narita, Sanada versus Yota Tsuji, Konosuke Takeshita against Gabe Kidd, David Finlay against Ryohei Oiwa, Shota Umino versus El Fantasmo, Yuya Uemura versus Oleg Bolton, Drilla Maloney and Great O'Khan, Callum Newman versus Evil, and kicking things off, Shingo Takagi against Yoshihashi. That I imagine will be a quiet banger that those two will have match out of the gate.
I think it was 2021. Shingo got, I think, the best singles match that I've ever seen of Yoshihashi's career.
It might be Yoshihashi's biggest match of the whole tournament. Yep, is that opener? And then we fast forward 24 hours to night number two. Same city of Hokkaido with Zack Sabre Jr., Gabe Kidd on top, followed by Taichi against Yuya Uemura, El Fantasmo against Takeshita, Evil against Yota Tsuji, Shingo Takagi versus Great O'Khan, Sanada versus David Finlay, Yoshihashi draws Ren Narita, Ryohei Oiwa versus Oleg Bolton, Shota Umino taking on Drilla Maloney, and Hiroshi Tanahashi against Callum Newman in the opener. I can see upset territory on that one as well. So those are the first two nights. Karen and Bruce will have a show on the Post Wrestling Cafe on Sunday, recapping those first two nights. And then all the fun continues through August the 17th. We will have shows Sunday with Bruce and Karen, Wednesday with Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal, and then next Friday with myself and Eric Marcotte. That will be our first week of coverage. So you will be hearing all of our voices throughout the next month as we tackle the G1 climax. So any final takes you have to make, Bruce? Any strong prognostications? Do you want to disclose who is your favorite to come out of this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be filling out my block. You
might have talked me into to Takeshita. I've not done my picks yet. I still have to do those, but you made a compelling case.
Yeah. I've got Takeshita over Tsuji in the finals, and I have Tsuji currently right now. We'll see. I'm going to have a second cup of coffee and see how I feel. But I've got Tsuji, Finlay, and Uemura ranked in that order at the top of A, and Takeshita, Zack, and Umino at the top of B. Right now, we'll see how I feel in 10 minutes time, but that's currently what I'm eyeing up.
All right. Well, there you go, everybody. Final plug, postwrestling.com/G1. The deadline is tonight at midnight Eastern. It's free to join. Make all of your picks. You know, you can add, I don't know if AI will help or hinder you when it comes to getting into Ghetto's head, but, however you want to make your picks, you can do so. Sometimes the randomizer is, as astute as any of the prognosticators. But that is all going to be coming up over the next month. Again, postwrestlingcafe.com. If you sign up today, it will give you 30 days access, and therefore you will get all of the G1 podcasts right through until the finals, where Bruce will be on the call for the final night with Karen and WH Park. We're bringing the Holy Trinity together for that final weekend of G1 shows. But Bruce, it's always great to sit down and chat some New Japan with you, and we will see what the next month has in store.
Absolutely. I know I've said this to you before, both on and off the record, but really, you know, your coverage of the G1 many, many years ago was one of the things that both really got me into, you know, following your work, but then also New Japan as well. So it's really, really a privilege and an honor to be part of everything that's happening here at Post over the next month or so as we get into the G1. Still the best bell-to-bell wrestling tournament that we have on God's green.
Well, sit back, everyone. Pour yourself a nice glass of Port Ellen and get ready for the journey of Shota Umino over the next month. For Bruce Lord, I am John Pollock, and that wraps up our preview of the G1 climax.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same-day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.